Chapter 19. Franny Saves the Campaign. Franny had never discussed her alcoholism publicly. Part of the disease is the shame that comes with it. She had shared her story only with a few close friends, including those she had met in AA. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous for a reason. Traveling around the state, Franny could see the toll that all the attack ads on my character was taking, and it was making her mad. She knew very well that the guy they depicted was not the guy she had married and raised two children with. Franny wanted to tell Minnesotans who I really was. She insisted on sitting down with Mandy and a camera crew. Mandy interviewed Franny in our living room for over an hour, and Franny spoke honestly and openly about her disease. And while the vicious attack ads from the Republicans had made Franny's mom cry, the ad Mandy and her team cut together still makes me cry whenever I see it. In fact, when Chuck Schumer saw it, he called me to say that he had cried, and also that he thought it would win me the election. The ad is very simple. Franny sitting on a couch, talking to an off-camera Mandy, intercut with photos of me and Franny as we've gone through the years, with photos of our beautiful daughter and son and our family. Here's the text. I first met Al at a freshman dance in college, and it was love at first sight. We've been married now for almost 33 years, and we've been so blessed in so many ways. But we also had some bad times, and at one point in our life, I struggled with alcohol dependency. How could a mother of two fabulous, healthy children be an alcoholic? When I was struggling with my recovery, Al stood right by my side, and he stood up for me. After what we went through, Al wrote two beautiful movies, and he wrote them because he wanted to help people. And they're used in rehabs all over the country. The Al Franken I know stood by me through thick and thin. So I know he'll always come through for Minnesota. It was a 60-second ad, which meant it was twice as expensive to run, but you try editing that down. What blew me away the most was the line, "How could a mother of two fabulous, healthy children be an alcoholic?" It was so honest about the shame she had felt, and the shame that so many women with chemical dependency feel. "This ad is the best political ad of the season," wrote local TV anchor Esme Murphy on her blog, "because it might just help one person see in themselves the need to get help." 2 days later, Coleman Barkley and I had a debate in a gymnasium with a big crowd sitting in the bleachers and in chairs on the gym floor. When Franny entered the room, she got a standing ovation. There is no question that I would have lost the election if Franny had not made that spot. The courage that it took amazes me. A couple of years later, a book came out about the 8-month recount and legal battle entitled "This Is Not Florida." If you go to the index and look under Frank and Franny, the first entry is "and alcoholism." People often come up to me and tell me that I have a thankless job. But as Lorne Michaels used to say, the thing about a thankless job is that nobody thanks you. And people thank me all the time. I think it's Franny who has a thankless job. Which reminds me, I really ought to thank Franny one of these days for making that ad. You know, and all the other stuff. In that debate, the one in the gymnasium, Norm brought up my assault on the protester in Manchester, New Hampshire. When I told the crowd about getting the key to the city, they laughed. I had played a good game of golf, but by the next debate, the course had changed dramatically. All summer long, the housing market had been in turmoil, and on September 29th, the financial crisis reached a climax in the wake of Lehman Brothers going under. It took about a week for a $700 billion-plus bailout package to work its way through Congress. Coleman immediately came out for the bailout, telling voters in North Mankato that the government could make 10 or 20 times what it pays on this, possibly. "It shows how out of touch he is," I told the Star Tribune. I admit that I had the luxury of not having to cast a vote during a rapidly escalating crisis. But I felt that the bailout as proposed did little to protect taxpayers and nothing for homeowners who were the victims of the malfeasance of so many of those who were being bailed out. I said I'd vote for a package that had ownership stakes for taxpayers and companies seeking relief, the creation of a Financial Product Safety Commission, Protections for homeowners, like allowing bankruptcy lawyers to adjust mortgages in order to prevent foreclosures, and no bonuses or golden parachutes for executives. At that next debate, which was televised nationally, the bailout became the centerpiece of the discussion. Norm asked how I could have opposed a bailout that Senators Amy Klobuchar and Barack Obama had both voted for. I guess maybe, I offered, a maverick. As the audience laughed, Norm responded a little uncomfortably and more oddly, considering that his party's nominee that year was Senator John McCain. I guess Minnesota should decide if they want a maverick in the Senate. Franken internal poll, October 1st, Coleman 40, Franken 34, Barkley 18. Franken internal poll, October 8th, Franken 40, Coleman 32, Barkley 22. It's certainly possible that Norm's decision to support the bailout of Wall Street and my decision to oppose it was a factor in this swing. But in the October 1st poll, only 33% of Minnesotans reported they had a favorable opinion of me. Then came Franny's ad. And a week later, it was up to 41% favorable, with a lot of the difference coming from women. Still not exactly beloved territory, but it was a real turning point in the race. Another came that very day, October 8th. All summer, we'd been making the case that Norm was kind of shady, pointing to the sweetheart deal he'd gotten on that apartment in D.C., as well as a long litany of trips he'd taken to exotic destinations like Paris and the Bahamas, all paid for by special interests with business before the government. This was technically legal, but nearly 50 trips over his first term at a cost of nearly $100,000 spoke to a guy who was way too close to powerful interests. In fact, the Center for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington awarded him an honorable mention in their list of the most corrupt people in Washington, a list, by the way, that included both Democrats and Republicans. In early October, a reporter from Harper's Magazine had started digging in rumors that a businessman named Nazar Kazmini, who had flown Norm around the world on his private plane, had also bought Norm some suits. The Senate requires you to report gifts from friends. Norm had not reported being gifted any suits. It was curious, to say the least. On October 8th, when Coleman campaign manager Colin Sheen called a press conference to attack me for some unrelated nonsense, the reporter pounced, asking whether there was any truth to the rumor. The senator, Sheen said, has reported every gift he's ever received. That wasn't my question, the reporter responded, but Sheen gave the exact same answer. The senator has reported every gift he's ever received. So Senator Coleman's friend has not bought these suits for him, is that correct? The senator, Sheehan repeated, has reported every gift he's ever received. Colin Sheehan never actually answered the question of whether Kazmini had bought Coleman any suits, but over the next few minutes, he would go on to repeat the same oddly legalistic answer nearly a dozen times. It couldn't have been more clear that something was up. The video went viral, making a round of the national blogs. I was as curious as anyone as to whether there was some big scandal lurking here, but I was also looking forward to what we had planned for the next day, October 9th. Many of the Republican ads that summer had featured a particular clip of me, my face contorted, my arms waving, I'm practically jumping up and down, and I look like I'm having a temper tantrum. It's not my best look. But I recognized that clip, and I knew exactly where they had gotten it. Paul Wellstone had been an amazingly passionate guy with extraordinary energy. He'd always end his speeches with an astounding burst of enthusiasm that brought crowds to their feet. Democrats in the state loved it and always waited in eager anticipation for him to rock it at the end. The closest thing I've experienced has been at Grateful Dead shows. Now, during the campaign, my friend David Wellstone, one of Paul and Sheila's sons, spent some time touring the state with me. One day I asked David a question that had been on my mind for a few years. David, I've heard this thing about your dad, and I wanted to ask you. I heard that he had so much energy that when you kids played soccer, he'd run up and down the sidelines, following the ball back and forth, up and down the field. Is that true? Yeah, Dave nodded, but get this. I ran cross country. He paused for effect. He didn't. David nodded again. My dad used to run alongside me just off the side of the course. And about 300 yards from the finish, I'd be about 10 yards behind the leader and totally out of gas. And my dad would start yelling, "You can take this guy! You can take this guy! You can do it! You can take this guy!" Now, imagine how weird that was for the other guy. I started telling that story in my stump speech, and I'd end with running in place, wildly gesticulating, screaming, "You can take this guy! You can take this guy!" And then I'd tell the end of the story, which was David saying, "And wouldn't you know it, I'd take that guy." Then I'd exhort the crowd, "I need you to be my Paul! Will you be my Paul? Will you be my Paul?" Crowds loved that story, so I started doing it at the end of rallies. And Republicans had taken their tracker's footage of this and run it through the dehumorizer, which apparently could process body language just as efficiently as it could words. Without the sound, I looked pretty crazy. So our ad, another Saul Shore joint, simply explained what they'd done. It opened on a picture of Paul, no music. Paul Wellstone used to run alongside his son David when David was running cross-country races. Began the narrator, an elderly gentleman who sounded like the guy from Pepperidge Farm commercials. Listen to Al Franken tell the story. And then the video of me telling the story, with David Wellstone sitting right there, and a charmed crowd grinning and chuckling at the memory of Paul. And when I got to the "you can take this guy" part, the narrator pauses the clip. "Look familiar?" he asks, as a few frames from the Republican ad that had taken me out of context slid onto the screen next to me. That's right. Ads for Norm Coleman used footage of Al Franken telling this story about Paul Wellstone and his son, and tried to make it seem like he was angry. It's not uncommon to see one ad debunking another ad. But this one felt different. With no music, no hyperventilating narration, no flashy graphics, and a tone that suggested it was more in sadness than in anger. It was, in a way, an ad not just about one deliberate mischaracterization, but about the entire rotten campaign Republicans had run against me. If they could lie about me telling a story about my late friend, a story that was about his positive energy and his enthusiasm and his spirit, then what else were they lying about? Could we trust anything they said? And what did it say about Norm that this is how he was hoping to keep his job? Minnesota deserves better, the ad concluded. And I think Coleman must have realized Minnesotans would agree, because the very next day he announced that he was going to pull down all of his negative ads and run a purely positive campaign the rest of the way. He explained that he had come to this decision over the recent Yom Kippur holiday. Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, is the holiest day on the Jewish calendar. And Norm had evidently had an epiphany. "I decided I was not all that interested in returning to Washington for another 6 years based on the judgment of voters that I was not as bad as the other guys. I want folks to vote for me and not against the other folks." It was probably just a coincidence that a recent poll had shown that, by a more than 2-to-1 margin, voters blamed Norm more than me for the negative tone of the race. And it was probably just a coincidence that this was happening the day after we'd busted him, telling a particularly ugly lie about my Paul Wellstone impersonation. And it was probably just a coincidence that 2 days earlier, his campaign manager had signaled to the world that there was likely a major ethics scandal brewing in Norm's closet. We were incredulous. "It's like an arsonist burning down every house in the village and then asking to be named fire chief," we told the press. But incredibly, his claptrap seemed to be working, and our lead began to dwindle. Franken internal poll, October 15th. Franken 39, Coleman 32, Barkley 24. Franken internal poll, October 21st. Franken 39, Coleman 35, Barkley 21. Franken internal poll, October 23rd. Franken 40, Coleman 37, Barkley 18.